and welcome back to the Being Husband Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan West, bringing you guys another episode here, telling you all like I always do. Thank you for being a part of the work that we're doing. Guys, if you've been with us for any length of time, then you know what we're all about. We're here to help you as a man live on mission in your marriage. And today is an episode just like that. I've got a great conversation lined up with my buddy, my friend from the Undaunted Life podcast. It's undaunted.life podcast, Kyle Thompson. And he and I have been, we've had conversations before on this podcast. And this is one that I think is probably our better one, to be honest with you. It's a really good podcast. We're talking about feminized worship music, but then we just get into a conversation about where in the world our country's going and a feminized culture in general. And so how we can be stewards of not just the Lamb of God, but the Lion of Judah as well. And so I really respect Kyle for coming on. I love having conversations with that guy. And if you guys find this episode helpful, make sure that you like and share with friends. Make sure that you leave us a rating and review on Apple iTunes. And while you're at it, go ahead and give us a follow on Instagram, at BeingHusbandPod on Instagram. That's at BeingHusbandPod. I know you guys are probably scratching your head saying, Jonathan, you didn't drop an episode last week. Well, as you guys know, if you follow the Instagram page, my wife and I are expecting our first. And so that's great. And I'm excited about that. But that is causing some scheduling difficulties. There's some challenges that we've got to go through and that we got to figure out. But all that being said, I'm very thankful for you guys' patience. I'm very thankful for you guys' engagement on Instagram and the reviews you guys are leaving on Apple iTunes. I so appreciate that. I pray that you guys continue to do that. If you follow the Instagram page, anyone that left a suggestion on episodes that we need to cover moving forward, I want to say big thank you to you. We will be covering those things. You guys have helped me a lot because you basically have built out my content calendar for me. So thank you for doing that in the midst of, you know, dealing with a new baby on the way. I really appreciate you guys taking time to do that. So without further ado, this is my conversation with Kyle Thompson on feminized worship music and there go a feminized culture. Stay tuned.
Absolutely, man. Glad to be here.
Oh, man, it's good. It's good to have you back because you, last time you and I talked, you were not a dad. Now you're a whole dad. The beard is in full. The hair is popping. I mean, you look like you've got some wisdom to share.
Hey, you know what? I woke up like this, and I will tell you, you probably can't see from this far away, but I do have a few gray hairs in the beard now. Yeah. I'm not going to blame that on my child, but I'm also not going to blame that on my child. So, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of a cool thing because I was a husband, right? You know, here we are on the Husband Podcast. I was a husband for over a decade before I became a father. And so my wife and I have been together total for about 15 years. But then when about 9 months ago, you add a little boy to the mix, it literally changes everything, which is news to nobody on your listenership that already has a kid. And so, but it is kind of it's a cool thing. It's a bunch of new experiences all at once.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome, man. Well, look, I appreciate you coming on. But for those guys that haven't listened to, it was a podcast Kyle and I did. It's probably been a year or something, year and a half maybe ago. It was, I think, an Undaunted Theology. And it was a really good podcast. So go back and listen to that. But for those that haven't listened to that, who's Kyle Thompson? What's he do? What's his kind of deal?
Yeah, so essentially for me, I run Undaunted Life, and Undaunted Life is an organization that is there to equip men to push back darkness, okay? And the way that we do that is we create content, whether it's podcast content or written content, that helps men cultivate spiritual, mental, and physical resilience, okay? We like to talk about resilience, not really strength, because the thing with strength, as we all know, strength can wane over time. You know, guys are like, oh, I'm not as strong as I was when I was 25, or, you know, if you worked out really hard yesterday, you're not as strong technically today. But resilience is that ability to bounce back. No matter what's in front of you, the ability to bounce back, and you need to be able to cultivate that spiritually, mentally, and physically, because there's a lot of guys that only focus on one of those three areas, right? Maybe they're, you know, swole out dude, can, you know, run a million miles, but they haven't read a book since high school. Like, you have to be a real well-rounded man. And the pushback darkness stuff, and you know this, and you talk about this on your podcast, and I certainly do on mine, there's a lot of spiritual and cultural darkness right now. I mean, it's all over the place. The problem with most men, though, is that they're not equipped to fight against it. They don't have the arguments ready to go to answer for a lot of the LGBTQ nonsense that we get into, for some of the bad theology being preached from the pulpits at their churches. A lot of these men just aren't equipped, and some of that is their fault, and some of that isn't their fault. And so we're doing what we can to kind of fill that gap in.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and I gotta say, when I stumbled across your podcast those that year or so ago, I could tell this was a guy that was working the angles. He was working on the physical, he was working on the spiritual, and working on the mental game. And so I can honestly say, us crossing paths has definitely been a big. And maybe I don't tell you this, but it was that conversation you and I had really sparked something in me, man. And I've been a listener ever since, and I've been a guy that's been trying to work all three of those categories ever since. So I really appreciate the work that you've done. You've got a devotional too, for guys that don't know, on the YouVersion Bible app. So make sure to check that out. It's a what is it, a week or a month? I can't remember anymore.
I've got two on there. So one is a
Okay.
21-day men's devotional, and then I've got a 5-day marriage devotional on there.
Got it. That's what it is. Okay. So yeah, good deal. Appreciate you a lot for what you're doing. What I wanted to bring you on today is because you've always been a guy that's had a way with words. And it was the episode you did a while back called "Pussies in the Pews," and I almost feel like this episode that I'm about to mention is a follow-up to that. And that is, what is it? Feminized worship music? The issues with feminized worship music?
Yeah, it's the episode was I think it was modern or contemporary worship music is for women and effeminate men
Yeah.
was the name of the episode.
Dude, so you don't pull any punches, and we know that. But I want to get into that because, A of all, it's not politically correct. Why would you say something like that? It's very rude of you to say, first thing. The second thing is who do you think you are condemning modern Christian music? We're on the radio now. All of the modern Christian music is played on the radio. Who are you to try to push back and say that it's feminized or for effeminate men?
So, first of all, I'm only who I can be, and that is myself. And I am a bold guy. And whenever I see something that I feel like is wrong, I do like to point it out, and I
Yeah.
like to welcome that conversation. And the thing about it is I feel like the biggest reason why I did that podcast, because you go back to episode 4 of the podcast, which was "Pussies in the Pews," and I think the contemporary worship music is for women and effeminate men was like 175, 176, something like that. And so I had kind of introduced the concept of most worship music being very effeminate very early on in my podcast. But then I never really found the time or wanted to give the brain space to doing an entire podcast on that subject so I could elucidate my findings and my theories further. But I made that podcast for a particular person. And it's for the man that goes to church. That's already maybe a little bit uncomfortable for whatever reason. Maybe it's his background. Maybe the guys that he's seen around him just don't really look like him or feel like him. Like, and then they have this worship music, and it's this very emotive, very breathy, very dramatic, emotional music. And he's just like, man, is something wrong with me? Is something going wrong in my heart? Because this, I kind of feel like this music sucks. But if I say that out loud, do I go straight to hell when I die? Do I take a detour where I go to the Christian music store and pick up some music on my way to hell so I have something to listen to? And so I made this episode for them, and kind of the whole point of that episode was for those guys that don't like modern worship music to tell them it's okay. It's okay if you don't love this style of music because there's a lot of things not to like.
So you really were trying to give voice and really just a, I guess a breath of fresh air to say, hey, this doesn't mean that you're not saved or that you don't love the Lord. It just means that you don't jive with the music. And there's
Right.
reasons for that.
Absolutely. And I kind of wanted to put that gap in there, Jonathan, where it was like, hey, if you love this type of music and you're a listener of my podcast, that's fine. Everyone's got their own style of music. Some people like heavy music, some people like hip hop, some people don't like music at all. So if that's like what you're into, that's fine. But I think that there's this gap with a lot of men that keeps them from coming to church. And some of it is, the people around them, some of it's the music, some of it's the worship con or the lyric content, sermon content, things like that. And you're keeping people from the churches, and you're keeping these men from being able to serve and learn under the tutelage of the good men in that church. And it could be something as simple as the music. And so I kind of go into a lot of detail on that episode. I would, we can't really cover all of it here in this
Of course.
episode. So I would encourage our guys to go listen to episode 176 of the Undaunted Life. Life podcast. But beyond that, I really just think that most guys didn't have the words to say about their frustration in this area. And that has been confirmed for me because we've gotten a lot of emails since that episode release, some from guys that are like, I never really knew that I could like talk about this. And then all of a sudden, you know, you talk about it and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one having this problem. You know, I talk about a story about a buddy of mine who's a worship leader, a worship pastor, saying that I wasn't saved because I didn't like modern worship music. Wow. And I, you know, I kind of blew him off just because he's my buddy. And, you know, if push came to shove, it wouldn't be the best thing for him. But it's just, it's one of those deals where it was like, there are a lot of people that think that if you don't raise your hands during worship and close your eyes super tight and do that whole thing, that somehow the blood of Christ doesn't cover you as well. And I think that's super inappropriate.
Yeah, definitely. I could agree with that. And it's funny because it's in line with a sermon that I heard a long time ago. It was by Bodie Bauckham, and Bodie was talking about the modern church and the and sissified Jesus, I think is what he said. And it's kind of it's a theme that's been really present in your podcast and mine and some other, I would say, Christian men podcasts as well, that there's this really weird disconnect that we have with Jesus, that we have this idea of Jesus that he was, you know, maybe I won't say not a man, but we have an idea more so that he was a little bit more tender. And that's one of the things that you've pointed out as well in your podcast, that he is the Lamb of God, but he's also the Lion of Judah. And so one of the things that led me to was wanting to have a conversation with you and some other guys about trying to really synthesize that. And I wanted to ask you, you know, from the study that you've done, where have you seen, or rather, where did you pinpoint that we as a church, as a body of Christ, maybe went wrong in our theology and then as a result went wrong in perhaps our worship music in relation to Christ?
Yeah, that's a big question. And in episode 4 of the podcast, Pussies in the Pews, I do go into some of my theories as to kind of why we have the problem today with effeminate Christian men and effeminate pastors and things like that. And I even think I did an entire episode on the problem with effeminate pastors. I can't remember the total of it. But if you go back to the Industrial Revolution, and also you go back to the first couple of world wars, the able-bodied, testosterone-filled, courageous men were either underground in a factory or in a foxhole somewhere. And so what that left is that left a lot of congregations with old, sickly, or young men and a bunch of women. And if you're a pastor, and maybe you yourself are a priest, and maybe you yourself are a little bit effeminate yourself, wouldn't it make sense that the majority of your sermon content and the lyrical content of the music that you're choosing to worship by singing would become a little bit more effeminate? And listen, like I'm a salesman and a marketer by trade almost and by profession. And if you have 90% of a market that is one way, you're not really going to worry about spending a lot of time learning how to market and sell to that other 10%.
Of course.
And if your congregation is 90% people that are effeminate, whatever gender, by the way, there are only two of those. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, you're going to cater to that type of a thing. And I think a very good point was made by David Murrow in the book, Why Men Hate Going to Church. Mm-hmm. He was talking about back in the day, the worship was done by the elders. It was done by the pastors. Like it was done by these regular, real, like virile guys. But then over time, that became a profession. Worship leader. You got a title and a business card and you got paid a salary by the church or something like that. Yeah. And most of the people that would consider themselves worship leaders by trade, they are an artist. They're a musician. So they're more right-brained. They're more into the emotive things of the world, maybe not as much of the tangible, logical side of things because they're just not using that part of their brain. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of ways to answer that question, Jonathan, but I think for the most part, it's just the slow trickle of time. Mm-hmm. And then now I feel like there's something that's exacerbating the problem, making it worse, and that is the extreme change in the speedy change of culture, right?
Culture.
And so just think of the things that you could have said 10 years ago that people would have thought was insane. Mm-hmm. Like 10 years ago, oh, an 8-year-old can choose their gender. People would, you know, want to lock you up for that. But now that's in the Overton window. That's this political discourse. And so in a lot of ways, the modern church is downstream of culture.
Yes.
Where it's used to, it was upstream of culture. Culture would
Yes.
follow what the church has done. It's
Yes.
completely flipped. So I think all those things are related.
Definitely. And that's another big piece of this too, is we have lost a lot of leverage and a lot of influence in the culture. And I think a big piece of that is because we're saying kind of the same thing. I had a guy on, and we'll publish it soon, Michael Foster, and he and I had a conversation about basically androgyny and androgynism being a form of paganism. And it's basically the idea that we come from, a lot of modern Christians come from, is that men and women are essentially the same except for the plumbing. And Michael Foster's pushback is like, well, what do you mean just the plumbing? Like, men have testosterone, women have estrogen. We have different bents and different types of personalities that vary between the sexes. It's not merely the plumbing, and the plumbing is really an outworking of what's genuinely different about the two identities that God created when He made man and woman. And so his main thesis in all of that was to say that when you get to a place where we're basically the same, just the plumbing's different, you allow a lot of space for the transgender ideology to kind of come through in your church. Because what argument do you have against it? If it's all same, just the plumbing, change the plumbing. You know what I'm saying? And that was his main pushback.
Well, and the problem we also have now, Jonathan, is you have a lot of these pastors that are gospel and, as opposed to sola scriptura. And so even a guy like Matt Chandler, he absolutely broke my heart about a month ago when he was talking about, you know, race in the church and all that. And he's basically saying, we're not Marxists, we're not critical theorists. And if you say we are, that's just Satan speaking through you. But also, here are the things we learn from reading critical race theorists and, you know, how that applies to how we, you know, look through the gospel as a prism for how we view the world. And it's like, hello, hello, mm-hmm. did you hear yourself mm-hmm. just then? And it's this attitude for most of these people that they don't understand that they're on the opposite side of the spectrum of where logic is, where truth is. And with the whole man and woman thing, I forget who pointed this out. I need to find it because I always talk about it. But it talked about how later on in kind of the Roman Empire and in the Greek Empire, things were so good in these empires that they started arguing about gender. And about femininity and masculinity, which is indicative only of a culture that has it so good.
So much money. Like,
right. There's so much money. There's so much, you know, prestige, and there's so many good things that we can waste time on this absolute and complete utter nonsense. But it used to be a nonsensical thing. Now it's becoming a dangerous thing because there's going to be litigation, and there's going to be, if the Equality Act passes in the Senate, which, you know, just passed in the House of Representatives a little bit, people that consider themselves to be trans will be elevated to the same level of people that are discriminated against based on their country of origin, their religion, their race, basically things that they can't control, right? And so we're going to be valuing people that literally have a mental disorder, right? They think they're the opposite sex. And as opposed to giving these people help, we're going to tell them it's okay. You're fine this way. You were born this way. And a lot of churches are doing the same thing. You have a lot of churches that are embracing the LGBTQ nonsense because they're saying they're doing it out of love. But the thing is you're not loving somebody if they're doing something to damage themselves and you don't point that out, right? Yes. Jonathan, if I walked up to you into your house and I saw you with a hammer and you were just smashing yourself in the hand repeatedly, it would not be good for me to come up to you and be like, hey, brother, I'm praying for you. All right, I got to go. Have fun with your hammer, right? Yeah. You know, that would be a silly, it's a ridiculous example, but you are doing harm to yourself. And at the very least, I need to express that harm verbally, if not intercede physically. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if I continue on hammering my hand, then that's between me and the Lord. But the point is, you're exactly right. It's not loving to allow someone to damage themselves permanently. It's not. And I gotta be honest, man. I saw the video of Rand Paul, and this is look. And this is one of the things I've been telling people. After dealing with this election, I am, for all intensive purposes, apolitical, because there is overwhelming corruption that I've seen on both sides of the equation. And for me, at this point, I'm more concerned with how do we again become the light in the midst of a dark world? How do we again become, as you pointed out, the people that are influencing culture and not culture influencing us? And I think that that's almost at this point, and maybe you can provide some pushback or maybe some nuance here, but I think policy is almost irrelevant. I think influence is probably more important than policy, because at this point, the Republicans and the Democrats, they're not really arguing different positions. It's just who's going to do it faster or who's going to do it slower.
Well, Jonathan, influence isn't enforceable, but policy is. Mm-hmm. And so I was invited to do a podcast late last year. This was about a week before the election. And the guy reached out to me and said, hey, I want to ask some questions about whether or not Christians should be, you know, politically involved in that type of thing. But he's like, hey, don't worry. This is going to be an anonymous interview. I'm going to be interviewing five or six people, but they're going to leave their names nameless, right? And I emailed him back and I said, I'm happy to do your podcast, but there is a 0% chance I'm not going to put my name to it. If you're going to say it, you put your name to it. Not a pen name, you put your name to it. And one thing that I talked about is a lot of people were exasperated by 2020. A lot of people were exhausted by the run-up to the election and then the subsequent nonsense that we've seen beyond the election from both sides. And the concern I have is, in this world, you can have influence, but you can't enforce it, right? As I said a second ago. And so, like, if stealing a car weren't illegal, if you were just encouraging people not to do that, when somebody is harmed by their car being stolen, there is no retribution for that person. The sure. only hope we have is that that individual brings the car back and apologizes for the harm that they've done and given some sort of a reparation. But that's not the world that we live in. Most people don't operate off that worldview. Essentially, you're not going to see your car ever again, you know, file your insurance and kind of move on with your life. And so that's the thing that I would be concerning to people. Like, if someone wants to say, hey, you know, I'm just not really down with the totality of the Republican Party or the Libertarian Party or the Democratic Party or the Green Party, I get it. If you're not down with that, you're not down with that. But you really can't be apolitical where you ignore culture. I was even talking with my neighbor yesterday. He was like, Kyle, I feel like your head's going to explode someday because you consume too much of this stuff. And I say, I have to consume this much because I have to know my enemy. I have to know the battles that are being waged. With COVID, do you know how many people didn't even know the names of their mayor or the name of their city council representative or who was on the school board? Until they basically told him, hey, you can't have a business anymore. Why? Because I'm a government bureaucrat and I say so. Hey, your kids can't come back to school. Why? Because one of them might have the sniffles.
Very true.
And at that point, there's nothing you can do about it in that moment. You got to wait a year or two for another election before you can have an impact because you were caught sleeping. And so that's the thing that I always encourage guys to do is you have to be involved everywhere where you can be involved. That doesn't mean you have to be obsessed with everything that's happening, but that's part of being well-rounded.
Yeah. And I think I would agree. I think my only pushback to that would be when I say influence, I don't merely mean from the standpoint of, you know, you're well liked, but I also think that property ownership, I also think connections to people in high places. I guess my main point is you can protest and you can elect whoever you want to. But from what I'm gathering from the system that we've created, and I believe we've created it, it's about who's bought and who's paid for. It's what it seems like to me. And I don't. And beyond that, I really don't. To be honest with you, the way the thing shook out, man. Because here's the thing: whether or not you believe it was wide scale voter fraud or whatever the case is, whatever, right? That is what it is. But if there's any voter fraud, if there's any issue in the election process, and we're choosing not to correct it, to me that signals that what matters more is who bought the politician than it does about who casted the ballot. What do you say? What do you think about that?
So I think you're making a fair point. The one bit of nuance that I might throw in there is there were a lot of Republicans, a lot of right-wing people, a lot of pro-life people that had internal consternation about whether Donald Trump was actually pro-life in his heart. And I would tell these people, and I would say on my show, I'm using this as a specific example, I could give a care less if he actually believes it. His policy is in the pro-life side of things. His policy points to the value of the Imago Dei. So I honestly don't care what his feelings are personally. It's like these people, you've probably seen Ben Shapiro pointed out, you know, they're like, oh, Joe Biden, he seems to really care and he seems to have concern for the American people, blah, blah. I don't want my politicians to have concern or care for me. For the most part, I want them to stay out of my life unless there's something that pertains to their role in government that they need to take care of. And if they're not doing a good job, it's up to me and the people around me to vote that person out. And so I think a lot of people are looking at the system, which is highly broken because it's a system made up of human beings in a fallen post-Genesis 3 world. But at the same time, I want you to do what I want you, what I want you to do. That's what I want. If I'm operating off of a gospel-centered worldview, that's what how I want you to operate. And that's how I want you to vote. And that's how I want you to campaign. And even if you don't believe that personally, don't care. Don't even care a little bit. And so I think a lot of people get into the kind of the cult of personality. Like, of course, they're overwhelmed by an orator like Barack Obama, who is a deeply corrupt and sinister human being. Or they're overwhelmed by the cult of personality of Donald Trump, who's a deeply corrupt and deeply sinister human being. Right? So I made everyone on your show mad all at the same time, Jonathan. They just thought I was going to leave it at Obama.
Good.
But that's the thing is you can't just leave it there, and you can't follow these guys as if they're your best friend or you want them to be your buddy. They work for you. Treat them as such.
Agreed. No, and I would completely agree with that. The callousness I think that I'm seeing too in relation to, because that's what I was going to get at before. The callousness that I saw in the video with Rand Paul and then the health secretary. Yeah.
Yeah. So the assistant health secretary. Yeah.
I got to be honest, man. My heart. So for those of you that haven't watched that, you should. I'll leave a link in the description. Like I said, whoever you voted for, you take your conscience up with the Lord. My point in this is really to transcend the political conversation and ask us the question: How did we get to a place where there are people that are going to leave parents out of the conversation for permanent genital mutilation for both young boys and young girls, right? Because what is the age? What is it? Is it 5 to 10, 8 to 10, something like that?
Yeah, I'm not sure what age they were discussing, but even Joe Biden during the debates in the run-up to the election was given an example of like an 8-year-old boy that wanted to transition genders. And the thing I think it attaches to, Jonathan, and this seems crazy, so I'm going to go ahead and say that right now, that this seems crazy, but you know, to you and your listeners that maybe aren't familiar with the Overton window, I know you know about the Overton window, but to your listeners, the Overton window is this concept where there are certain things in political discourse or in public discourse that are acceptable and not acceptable. So 100 years ago, interracial marriage was not an acceptable thing to talk about in polite society. And then now it's included in the Overton window. 20 years ago, gay marriage, not inside polite society discussion. Now it is. Transgenderism, 5 years ago, that really wasn't in polite society discussion, you know, about kids being able to transition. Now it is, right? At least in some factions. Where this is headed, Jonathan, and I know this is going to sound insane, but follow me, is where pedophilia is going to be inside the Overton window. Because if love is just love, Jonathan, right? If, you know, you can't tell me who I love and who I don't love, and you can't, can't legislate my love for whoever I love, right? You can't legislate that I was born this way. What stops a 45-year-old man who is physically attracted to 8-year-old boys from making that same exact argument? Why? Because you think it's depraved? But here's the other thing. In most states, the age of sexual consent is 16. But you have an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old that says they're the other gender, and the parents, right? They have no say in it. The pastors, they have no say in it. So they can't even consent to having sex, but they can consent to choosing their own sex.
100%.
I mean, you have to think about this. This seems crazy now. And for any of you that are thinking this is absolutely insane and you're wanting to turn this podcast off because you think I'm some sort of like, you know, conspiracy theory, you know, tinfoil hat QAnon guy, I'm just telling you, wait 5 years. Maybe not even that long, because the speed of the revolution in a lot of these areas, the sexual revolution, the trans revolution, it is not going to stop. And it's not going to stop with children. It's not going to stop with multiple wives, polyamory. It's not going to stop with animals. It won't stop. We are a depraved species. We are a depraved being, and Christ is the only thing that can save us. So it's one of those things where people want to talk about it like it's a small little granular thing, like, oh, wasn't Rand Paul so rude to Rachel Levine, a 60-something-year-old dude that thinks he's a woman who's going to be the assistant health secretary.
It's crazy.
So this is somebody with a mental disorder that she is, or sorry, that he is absolutely showing to the world. But at the same time, we can't question that. That'd be like you running the Department of Transportation and you have 10 DUIs. That wouldn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. 100%. And that's, I think, the frustrating part about it is that we can't have this conversation. You know what I'm saying? This conversation is actually not something that's accepted and able to be had in polite society. But as a husband and as a watchman and you know, as a father, we do have to be concerned with these things. So I want to be clear too. I'm not at all suggesting that we shouldn't. I'm just saying that I think that the emphasis has to be on, frankly, being as well connected as you possibly can to a community so that you can actually influence your local politics. Because Lee and I had a conversation and she said, what'd she say? She said, "But Jonathan, how do you feel if, we send our kids to school in the future and they're like, you know, we're going to open up the bathrooms to whoever wants to go in to identify?" And I said, "I wish AMF would." You know what I'm saying? I'm pulling up to the school board and I'm saying, "Yo, what's up? What are we doing today?" You know what I mean?
One, you wouldn't be the only one, because I've told people before, I was like, let's say, and I live in the state of Oklahoma, so the odds of this happening are not great, but let's say, you know, my son's just messing around one day and he's like, I want to play with a Barbie and wear a dress or something like that. And then he goes and sits with a counselor who is convincing him that he should probably start to transition or something like that. If the state ever tried to intercede and take my son away from me because I was keeping him from his true sexual expressive identity, you would never see the Thompsons ever again. We would be completely off the grid, okay? And the thing is if you come to my house and try and take my family member away from me, one of us is going to die. That's all there is to it. Nice. You're not taking my child from my home. I don't care. Bring an army. Bring an army. That's fine. Like, I don't have any illusions of grandeur. I'm not John Rambo. So I don't think I'm going to be able to defeat an army. But
you're
going to
go off swinging.
Right. You're not taking my kid away from me. But the other thing about it is how many parents are asleep at the wheel? Their kids are in public school. The assigned reading to your 7-year-old is the book, He's My Mommy. And you're just like, oh, no big deal. Kids will be kids. The thing is that is an idea that's being implanted in their brain and you can't unplant it. You know, I had a buddy I was talking to. His wife came home from picking the kids up from school and she was furious because she thought in the community that we live in, which is, you know, pretty affluent and, you know, a lot of people that are at least nominally Christian, that there was some LGBTQ nonsense that was shoved down her like 6-year-old boy's throat at school. And he came home and told her about it and she's losing her mind and doesn't understand why not. And that's not just the public school system. There was a private Christian school near my area where there was a staff member that came out as homosexual and the administration did not inform the parents. This is a Christian school, and that doesn't mean this person, needs to die. It just means that person probably shouldn't be working at that school. They chose not to tell the parents because they knew there was going to be this tremendous amount of backlash, and they were probably going to have to fire the teacher. And so, again, for a lot of guys, too many of you guys are asleep. You're not paying attention to what's going on around you until it's too late. For me, when I'm sitting there with like a 2-month-old, I'm not terribly concerned about the school district and what's going on because he's about 4.5 years away from really having to worry about that. But my wife and I, our son's not even 1 year old, we're having those deep philosophical conversations about what his education is going to be like and, you know, the reality of what type of school we would put him in, because everyone likes to make the coy argument where it's like, well, they're only at, you know, the school during the day. They live with you, right? They're with you all night, all weekend. Add up math. Exactly. You know, you got it. Add up the math. It's 8 hours a day for 5 days a week. That's 40 hours. Are you telling me that you're spending 40 plus hours a week of deep intellectual discussion time with your child to try and undo some of the things that are being done to them in the public school system? No, I don't think you are. You're asleep for most of that time, literally asleep. And so, yeah, it's like the public school system, if you let it, they will raise your kids and make them in their own image.
100%. Well, and make them hate you as well. Sure. You know what I'm saying? Gosh. So you said that you and your wife are having these conversations. and that's really what we're curious to know is, all right, so world's on fire. Everything's going, I mean, I feel like I'm old guy saying that everything's going to hell in a handbasket. You know what I mean? But right. but seriously, how is it that you are approaching this as a father, as a husband? How are you approaching having this conversation with your wife first? First, how are you approaching this in your relationship to God, right? How are you getting your own mind right in the midst of this? And then secondly, how are you taking what you've garnered from that conversation with the Lord and bringing that to your wife to say, all right, here's how we want to set the tone. Here's how we want to create the family culture. What do you think about this? I want your input. How are you doing that, Kyle?
Yeah. So when you're going to God in this type of a situation, in my opinion, I feel like you should say, God, what do you want me to know from everything that's happening, right? What do you need me to learn? So for instance, there's no part of my life that requires me to know what's happening with the engine in my truck, really. Because like, you know, with these modern trucks, if you go tinkering with it, you're probably gonna mess something up. You probably just need to take it in, you know, pay a little bit of money and have someone work on it. So I don't need to spend a lot of time reading, you know, stacks of books about, you know, internal combustion engines. That's just not really in my world. But there are people that is exactly what they need to know. Right. And so as I'm paying attention to society, as I'm paying attention to the culture around me, it's like, God, what are you trying to show me? Where's my front that we're going to wage war on, right? Where do you need me? Where are you dropping me in? And for a lot of guys, it's not necessarily the school board, but it might be. It's not necessarily the eldership of their church, but it might be. It's not necessarily the police department, but it might be. And so how I approach this with my wife is not nearly as in tune with the things going on around her that she can't directly affect, right? She runs a business. She has a lot of things. Her and my brain were very, very different, which surprise, surprise, we're married and we think and act differently, right? But she understands that I have a sheepdog mindset and she's down. She is down to be a sheepdog's wife, right? Because she doesn't want our son to be a sheep. And she doesn't want to be a sheep either. So she may not be as fired up as I am. She may not be as well read on the subject. She may not have thought through some of these difficult things as much, but she's down for the fight. She's down for the cause. And so when you have a ride or die like that, that's that close to you, yeah, and that is willing to go, that's kind of the biggest thing. Because at the end of the day, if I make a strong argument, say, hey, babe, I think we need to do this Christian charter school. I know it costs more money, but the public school system that you and I grew up in, it's not the same system that we grew up in. I think it's going to be a problem. It may take a couple of conversations, but we're going to do that. She's going to follow my wisdom and my leadership inside the household. And so there's not a whole lot of convincing. But the yeah, other thing about my wife is she's not just asleep at the wheel either. Right, we'll play a drinking game. Every time I say asleep at the wheel, take a drink. But she's not just brain dead in these conversations. Like, okay, husband, you do all the thinking for the family, and I'll just be over here cleaning dishes and baking a pie. No, she's engaged. She's thinking too. And if she has something to say that she thinks I'm missing, she's going to say it. But she does know that the final decision and is going to be from me and following my wisdom, even if we disagree. And we have that level of trust that we can make those decisions. But I do, Jonathan, at this point, I leave her out of some of these conversations.
Of course.
Some of these more nuanced conversations, just because she doesn't give a crap. Like, she doesn't want to talk about what's happening with transgender law in Canada. She just doesn't really care that much. Whereas I feel like I'm going to be asked about it. And so I need to have a reason and an answer for that, because one of my listeners is going to ask me about it. One of my Foxhole guys is going to ask me about it. And so if I don't have a fully formed opinion, I feel like that's an opportunity I missed on helping equip somebody to push back darkness.
Yeah, no. And I would agree with that too. And something that you said, I really want to touch on as well, because there are a lot of guys that listen to this, myself included, that might be going through a marriage where they are not seen as the sheepdog, in large part because they've not performed that way. So maybe walk us through, you know, and not holding you up as being some kind of venerated saint by any means, but walk us through how you were able to get that trust in your wife. Like, what was it for you, or what are the things that you do to earn that? Because it's not just given, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, your wife's an intelligent woman. She's a hardworking woman. She runs a business. She's not just going to, as you pointed out, you know, roll over and play dead. She trusts you, and there's a reason for that. So walk us through that.
Man, I think you might be a little bit let down by my answer, because whenever I look at my wife, mm-hmm, she's a gangster. Like she's a fighter. Before we met in college, in her mind, she was going to be single her entire life. She was going to have a Corvette and seven Huskies and this big empire business. And she was just going to run things and people were going to work for her. She was never going to work for somebody. Right. That was her mindset coming out of high school. Right. I mean, how many young women have that kind of a mindset? And so the thing is I don't really have to worry about her. Like there are some guys that are very close to me that the things I hear that their wives have done or the things I hear about their household, I'm absolutely broken up by it and I'm astonished by it. The level of evil, the level of vitriol, the level of bitchiness that these men have to deal with. And they're not saints either, but like these individuals are dealing with a different kind of animal than what I am. Yeah. So I feel supremely lucky. And I love bragging on my wife, but I understand that the guys around me, a lot of them don't have that. You know, yeah. I got one guy, you know, he's got four kids at home. He's out working in the oil field, you know, working these 60, 70 hour weeks. And he comes home to find out that his wife's banging the neighbor. And she's like, this is one of the crazy stories I've ever heard, but like, and you don't know who it is, so it's okay for me to talk about it. But here, he's in his house and he knows this is going on. She walks into their bedroom in lingerie and she says, I'm thinking about wearing this the next time I have sex with whatever the neighbor's name is. What do you think of it?
Oh, wow.
Think about the level of depravity, the level of evil, and the level of self-restraint he had to have at that moment to not just march his happy butt over to the next door neighbor's house and stomp him 12 feet into the ground. Yeah. And so, I think for me, it's kind of easy to be a sheepdog because my wife's a G about it. And then also, if I'm gonna, you know, if I'm gonna seek the Lion of Judah, she's down with that too. Like if I'm gonna be the main lion in our pride, she's gonna be the main lioness. That's just how she's wired. And so I feel like that's easy. But to kind of answer your question to make it a little bit more applicable for the guys that are listening to this, you do have to model it.
Yes.
You have to model that sheepdog mindset. You have to model that ability to take care of your family. And when people think of take care of their family, a lot of people have different paradigms, but that does mean take care of your family financially. That does mean taking care of your family spiritually, to interjecting in the spiritual realm and spiritual realm on their behalf and doing battle in the spiritual dimension on their behalf. It also means being able to physically protect them. Yeah. The number of guys that I know that, oh, well, we don't have a gun in my house because, you know, my wife, she's a little scared of guns. Oh, okay. So when the guy breaks into your house in the middle of the night and is ready to end you and your kids and your wife, are you just going to say, sir, but you just got to understand, you know, my wife's scared of guns. That's why I don't have it with me right now. Can we just talk about this? Can we just slow down a little bit? But then you have these other guys, they're concealed carry people, right? Right. So I'm a concealed carry guy, but I also know how to use these. I also know how to, and I also know how to fight. So at the end of the day, what if you don't have a weapon and you're in a situation where there's another man that is going to try to dominate you so bad physically that he incapacitates you. And then he does whatever he wants to your wife and children. At that moment, are you prepared to protect your family? Have you been training? Are you like, there was a kid earlier this week, the viral video of that OU football player that got beat up in the bathroom, right? Big OU football player gets beat up by this much smaller guy. And there's a lot of things you can learn about what happened in that interaction. But you had this big, tall, athletic, you know, scholarship athlete get whooped by a little guy. He thought he was big and athletic, and that's all he needed to be. There are a lot of guys out there that they're like, oh, I'm pretty big. I kind of know what I'm doing. I watch UFC. I could probably take care of myself. And they've never experienced going into a jiu-jitsu gym or a boxing gym and getting mauled by someone that doesn't look like an athlete, someone that doesn't present themselves well or have as big a biceps. And then they have that opportunity to get better in that way. And so what I would say is my wife has seen me model taking care of my body, taking care of my diet, training to be lethal with weapon systems and firearms, training to be lethal with my body. Also, digging into the word, reading, asking to pray together, seeking her in her relationship, seeking, you know, to lead the household financially. You can say these things all day. Baby, I love you. Okay, show me.
Baby,
we're going to be able to pay all the bills this year. Okay, boo, show me. That's kind of the difference is, talk about it. That's fine. Have those philosophical discussions. You got to act it out.
Yeah, man, that's a good word to end on. I really think that's a good word to end on, Kyle. You're giving us a lot to think about. Kyle, how can we connect with you, boss? How can we stay connected with the sheepdog?
Absolutely. So the website is www.undaunted.life. You can follow us on, you know, all the socials, just search for undaunted.life. But the biggest thing that we do and the thing that we do the most often is the podcast. So anywhere where you get podcasts, where that's, you know, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, whatever, Spotify, just search for Undaunted Life, a man's podcast, and you'll be able to find us. We've had a lot of great interviews with people that, you know, your audience would love, with, you know, Jack Carr, and we just got done with Stephen Pressfield. We had, you know, Representative Dan Crenshaw on here recently as well. So check us out there, and then you can interact with us anywhere you need to.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I forgot you had Dan Crenshaw on. That's impressive, man. All right. Well, Kyle, since you're a high roller, man, I guess it's probably our last time we'll have an interview, man. You're on the Hollywood. So
hey, man, we'll I was patient with you. We were having some technical difficulties. If I was really Hollywood, I would have went and, you know, got my Rolls Royce, you know, buffed, and I would have got my nails shined up. So no, I'm not that fancy. I will always have time for this podcast.
That's awesome, man. I appreciate it. All right. Well, Kyle, thanks for coming on, man.
Appreciate you, buddy.
And there you have it, gentlemen. Another one in the books. Appreciate you guys listening to us and listening to Kyle and I have that conversation. Kyle's a good friend of mine, and that podcast is called Undaunted Life. So go check out his podcast. Also, leave us a rating and review on Apple iTunes. It helps us to be able to get more visibility so that way we can share this message with more men. If you found this content encouraging, I encourage you to follow me at Being Husband Pod on Instagram. That's at Being Husband P-O-D on Instagram. And if the Spirit has so moved you in a way, I encourage you guys to take a look at our Patreon page, patreon.com/beinghusbandpod. That's patreon.com/beinghusbandpodcast. For $2 a month, you guys can help be a part of growing this movement, of men, encouraging us to get more guests on the podcast, encouraging us to expand our media opportunities here. And so we're excited for the direction that we're going. We're very thankful for all of our donors that are already on patreon.com. I really appreciate you guys for stepping up and doing that. And we want to thank always Octave Studios for our intro and our outro music. Thank you for being a part of the work we're doing. Guys, so with that, I say take care. And build on.